This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us. Everybody, welcome to the latest in our series of AdNonTech conversations. So as opposed to the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed, I'm joined here. I'm really, really pleased, beyond pleased, to have a guest of a certain stature in the field of e-learning. We have Dr. Nicole Johnson, and your institute has a bit of an unwieldy acronym, I gotta say, and I swore that I wasn't gonna practice it, but I also made a point of having it in the Google Doc, Canadian Digital Learning Research Association, CDLRA, which does kind of defy the tech tendency to have like a sort of word as your acronym, In all honesty, they've been doing great work. I've been looking at it and citing it since I became aware of it a couple of years ago, like in the notes for this podcast and elsewhere. And tremendous, awesome work. And it's just a real pleasure because as we were just kind of talking about previous to the show starting, this is something that was facilitated by a LinkedIn connection where we have no prior professional interactions. We haven't seen each other at a conference or anything like that, to the best of my knowledge, which is how these things sometimes fall into place. So again, for somebody who just reached out through a somewhat tenuous, somewhat weak social media connection, much respect and appreciation for being here, Nicole. So thanks a lot.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And, I really appreciated you reaching out. And when I looked back at your profile on LinkedIn, it seemed like it would be a really good fit. And I'm excited for the conversation today.
Awesome. And because we are in a time differential, you may be wondering, YouTube watchers, about the virtual background. Rest assured, I am not in Vancouver of the 23rd century, hence the arrow. Well, okay, they got, yeah. I was like, you know, Vancouver, futuristic. Vancouver's already kind of futuristic, isn't it? You are located in which city in BC, Nicole?
Yeah, so I'm in the Abbotsford area of BC. So the CDLRA is an organization. We're fully remote. So technically our headquarters are Ontario, but our whole team is across the country. So I live about an hour outside of Vancouver in Abbotsford, BC, which is awesome. Right on the U.S. border.
Yeah, Lower Mainland. I love it there. It's wonderful. Yeah. So again, I kind of had the kind of winding up the preamble or whatnot. What I kind of like to do with these interviews, both here and on the music show that me and my other friend do, is I just kind of like to open it up and say, like, I can read the LinkedIn summary, but I would be just curious to hear straight from you, for anybody listening at home who's outside of the e-learning area, who is Nicole and what is Dr. Johnson even all about, really?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I guess a bit about what I do. So, you know, speaking, you know, on this podcast with my, you know, CDLRA hat on a bit, I am the current executive director of the Canadian Digital Learning Research Association. We just refer to ourselves as CDLRA, like you had said with the acronym at the beginning. So, that's what I'll just refer to the organization as CDLRA throughout our discussion. I also have my own research and consulting practice. So I also work with a lot of clients in both Canada and the US and even internationally in the EdTech digital learning space. My main area of interest is macro level digital learning trends. So I'm always looking at those big scale trends. Done a lot of work recently on AI, work on the futures, like looking at the future of online learning or digital learning, I should say. I've done work on defining terms and a lot of work on faculty experiences in the sector, and especially during all the changes that happened during the COVID-19 pandemic. And then I also have a personal interest as well in informal learning and just how we learned things online when we're searching the internet and doing all the things that we do in this digital age. How does that impact how we learn? So a lot of interests, but all sort of big picture interests in what I do.
That is absolutely fantastic. And I actually have, just because there's so many different ways that we could sort of go into this conversation through what you just described, I am going to be somewhat diligent in trying to get the five questions that I have in the Google Doc for the benefit of the wider listenership, as opposed to what I just may personally find interesting, even though, you know, all of it is extremely interesting to me. But I did want to just, as you mentioned, with the organizational resources, with the, what, do we call it the pivot? Do you call it the pivot? How do you refer to the emergency transition to e-learning? I found your resources, the terminology as extremely, extremely helpful. Coming out of that period where, like, people are like, you know, well, I'm calling it hybrid, or I'm calling it, you know, like remote or whatever. I'm just like, let's just cleave all of that out and use a shared terminology, just so that institutional things can actually function from a shared set of terms, etymology, whatever. So a just major shout out to that whole project. I know you're doing tons of other stuff, but I just want to really give credit to where credit's due for something that I found extremely practical, timely, and useful, actually. So there. Sorry to go on a bit of a tirade during the quote unquote interview. So I guess, though, my scripted question now, actually, to reel it back in, I notice that you started out as a phys ed educator in your teaching career. And then there was sort of about a 10-year, according to LinkedIn, mind you, there's about a 10-year period, you know, between completing that study and then moving on into master's, where you sort of launched off formally into, you know, the e-learning and instructional design, or, you know, that space. I just wonder then, like, was there sort of an aha kind of moment for you that triggered that? Or was it more like an accumulation of things in your practice or some other way? I'm curious what led you into e-learning.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know that I've ever been asked that in an interview before, so thank you. It's got a unique answer. So you're right. I actually started my career in K-12, teaching middle school, of all things. And I've always felt like that actually is one of the best things that has given me, helped me as a speaker, because I feel like if you can speak to, you know, 11 and 12-year-olds every day and keep them engaged for, those 5 hours a day on different topics. You can speak to any audience. My specialty, I did my first degree in kinesiology and then went into education and middle school teaching, and with an emphasis on physical education. And again, kinesiology was another base degree that I found really, really helpful. I've used my knowledge from that throughout my life, even though I'm not in the field anymore. But yeah, during that 10 years time, I resigned from my teaching job when I had my oldest son. And during that time, I think right before I resigned from teaching, we were starting to have like classroom websites and stuff. So I was doing some technology things that I found really interesting during that time. And then, you know, I was busy for a few years at home having young children, you know, and taking care of them. But I found I wanted something more. And during that time, I was taking, starting sort of a bunch of entrepreneurial ventures, little things, whether as I got more into tech, doing like web design or things for people on the side. And I had a blog for years that no longer exists, which maybe is a good thing. I don't know that I want people looking at that if it did, but I had a product review blog for years, and I had a wonderful business partner that we worked on together, and we would test parenting products out. And so I was really in that. It was a digital learning landscape, but it was very informal. And I got very into entrepreneurship, and especially supporting women who had become entrepreneurs at the point of motherhood, and you know, not having that formal entrepreneurship training, but looking to get businesses off the ground, and how are they doing this? So I was doing this all in the beginning stages of this, where I actually found the opportunity to do a master's degree in educational technology. And, you know, I was home, I had two kids at the time, and I just thought it was really interesting. It was something that I could do while I was home with the kids. And I felt like I needed that intellectual stimulation, and it kind of all went from there. And I always say, like, I started my master's degree with two kids. I finished my master's degree with four kids, which I don't know that I would recommend that.
I hit my quota with two, and I'm just like, nobody is doing well if I have more kids in the world. But, you know, good for you, honestly. That's so impressive to me, just because, like, I'm always curious, because, like, within our, you know, field, so to speak, people just come at it from so many different areas, because it's always like a secondary. There's very few people who just kind of, I don't think I've ever met anybody who started out like in the B.Ed. is like, I'm going to be an educational technologist. I'm going to follow this program and have this be my career out of the gate. I don't think I've ever experienced that almost. So, I mean, it's fascinating, because like when my kid's mom had kids, she sort of, she was home for about 5 years, and she stepped into, you know, training of her own sort of variety, right? Taking the time when you have, you know, sort of a space around you outside of your typical professional milieu, right? Wherein you can kind of sort of envision where you might want to go forward, and especially in such a transitory time when you're bringing humans into the world. I mean, it's just, it's a really sort of pivotal, magical time, which anybody with kids doesn't need to hear about from me in the context of this interview. However, I wanted to just to say that sounds rad, basically. And if I can just sort of, again, kind of jumping into something that I found really curious when I looked at it on your LinkedIn within the past couple of days, when you went into your doctoral study, you studied through a European institution, right? A European distance open learning sort of institute. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah.
Next question would be, like, now that you're working because of your time with Royal Roads, and then subsequently to that, you know, what was the European e-learning sort of perspective relative to what you've experienced in Canada, if I can put it that way?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And it was a really valuable experience. So yes, you're absolutely correct. I did my PhD through the Open University of Catalonia, which is in Barcelona. It's an excellent institution. It's an open institution. So it was really my first experience with open learning and, you know, the accessibility that it offers, and much of the institution is online. And the fact that I could do my PhD, you know, entirely online. Now, I did get the opportunity to go out and, you know, visit down in Barcelona a few times, which was wonderful.
I love Spain. Spain is awesome. Love it.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place. But, you know, I found the one thing I think with our digital learning, or, you know, the distance learning world particularly, and, you know, the open learning, distance learning, it's very interconnected on an international level. So much, there's a lot of overlap between the programs that happen, you know, in Canada or in Europe or, you know, all over the world, really, in this space, because the people who are leading and running these programs are very interconnected. And they're, you know, I have, through that experience, I've gotten to know fantastic colleagues from around the world. And there's a lot of collaboration that happens, not just within, you know, within the country, but globally in this space. And I think that there's a lot of global input that goes into these programs. And certainly a lot of us know each other from around the world in that space. And it's a really great group of people. I thoroughly enjoy being part of that community. And it made the transition into the Canadian space very, very easy. I was fortunate to start working with Dr. George Bolitchanos at Royal Roads while I was doing my PhD.
And excellent. He is an outstanding, well-known researcher. I mean, again, for the people at home who, you know, are just checking this out from outside the field, you got to know this is a very significant thing, because George, I'll call him George, he's not here to tell me otherwise, you know, he's such an accomplished and visible figure. I understand he's back, you know, in the States now. But for the time that he was at Royal Roads, I mean, it was close to 10 years that he was there, wasn't it? Or thereabouts?
Yeah, I think so. I can't answer for him, but I feel like that sounds right.
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
That must have been a really amazing experience.
Yeah, it really was. And he, you know, was a fantastic mentor. So to have that mentorship from, you know, him on the Canadian side while I was doing my PhD on the European side, it really brought things together. And it was a really rich experience. And certainly having, you know, those mentors and those influences come into the space was huge. And of course, I was still doing my PhD when I started at the CDLRA. I started as on a short term contract as a research associate. And, you know, over 5 years later, here I still am. But, you know, in that process too, I was able to, again, work with and have mentorship from really wonderful experienced scholars in the field as well, including Dr. Tony Bates and also Dr. Jeff Seaman in the US. And again, numerous scholars, like the CDLRA board over the years, and, you know, the initial people who created the organization, it's a group of fantastic, well-known, accomplished scholars from across Canada and the US. And certainly I've been very fortunate in terms of who I've had mentor me over the years. And that's played a big role in terms of who I am and my approach to research and what I do today.
That is such an amazing, like, trajectory. And it just, like, that's sort of like, when you think about, like, the cool potential for open learning, you're thinking about, like, the emergence of, you know, networked learning, so to speak. And so, you know, actually taking these contacts and sort of, you know, you mentioned this word mentoring a few times just in these past 17 odd minutes. And I think that really speaks to something that, you know, for people just kind of entering, you know, the field, maybe that's something that they may find lacking. I mean, I've been in situations where, you know, mentorship was simply not there, and I improvised to whatever level of success. But I mean, again, just sort of the difference between having mentorship in your role and not is, you know, a major thing. And before I start asking you about the organization initiatives that you're involved in, and because that's definitely what we want to get into, I just would like to ask, I didn't quite get the total nuance of your doctoral work? Yeah. Does it inform what you're doing now? I mean, or did it set you up for what you're doing now, or overlap, or help you transition, like in and of itself, like the phenomena, the study? Did you want to perhaps just let the people at home who don't have LinkedIn in front of them to look at it?
I would say the answer to that is yes, 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 and yes to all those questions. Awesome. It really did inform. So I was really fortunate too. So my supervisor at WOC, which is what the Open University of Catalonia is called for short, Dr. Albert Sangra, he was great in letting me pursue a topic that was close to my, close to my heart, which was the informal learning and how entrepreneurs who are mothers who are gaining these skills, to developing entrepreneurial competencies and how that is impacting their capacity development. And to be doing that work at the same time that I was doing work on, research work related to formal learning with George, and then coming into this Canadian space and looking at that macro level, it really gave me a good understanding of, unique understanding of how we learn, and really that one of the foundations that I worked with my PhD was the notion of a learning ecology and understanding learning from an ecological perspective.
And that is so rad. Sorry, I don't want to just jump in and talk on top of you, fine. Just a total quick aside. When I got into the role that I just, that just ended, my previous role, one of the first things I did as a learning and development specialist was like conceptualize an ecology of what, the laying a foundation using good organic, living metaphors to inform any subsequent development that I was involved in. So when I hear you speaking about that kind of visioning, I just, something really sparks there for me. So again, I do apologize. Proceeding from there, you had a pretty straight line almost from where you were studying and then into what you're kind of doing now. I dare say that for some of us, myself and potentially others, it's maybe that's kind of, I don't want to say precarity of work and whatnot while you're kind of in that kind of earlier stage of the career. It sounds like you kind of were able to leverage your mentors, your connections and your education and your experience into what you're doing now. And I guess what was the role of the organization like when you first got involved compared to what you're doing now? I mean, when you first started within the organization, what was the emphasis? And is it similar now or has it changed?
Yeah. So I think, I'll start by just sort of commenting this here on the first part. Yeah. The trajectory has been, quite straightforward for me, but I think one of the key things, again, along with the mentorship I received that was so critical, was also the work that I had done on entrepreneurship. I think understanding and looking at, academic pursuits and academic careers from an entrepreneurship perspective, as I was studying the skills and competencies, that female entrepreneurs, need to develop in order, or should develop in order to be, successful, this skill set that is really well connected to success. I was learning that at the same time for myself. And I think being able to apply that to my academic and my career trajectory, we played a very big role in being able to get to the point that I'm at today. So I think that, entrepreneurial mindset certainly has served me well over the years. But when I did start, when I started at CDLRA, so I originally started on, 5 month, I think it was 5 months temporary contract to assist with writing we now call it the Pan-Canadian report, then was the national report, and doing some work on analyzing the data on that. And I was very excited. It was
The report of what? I'm sorry, for the people at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So maybe I'll just take a step back here and describe a bit about what the CDLRA does. So the CDLRA, our main thing that we do is we run a pan-Canadian digital learning survey. And so twice per year now, it was originally once per year, but twice per year, we survey those who work in the Canadian higher education space. So that would be everyone from administrators to faculty to teaching and learning leaders to instructional designers, educational developers, anyone who's involved in the teaching and learning part of higher or post-secondary education in Canada. You know, we're wanting to hear from them.
Awesome.
And yeah, we're asking similar questions over time. We're getting longitudinal insights and we're looking at how the digital learning landscape is changing over time. So when I jumped into my role with the organization, it was 2019. And again, I was coming to help write the report for the 2019 data collection to give those, you know, that those annual insights for the CDLRA. And then from there, I think they liked me. They kept me around. And I moved very shortly after that into the role of research director because the organization was, we could sense that it was growing. So I ended up staying on becoming research director. I started as research director, I believe it was about November of 2019. And so I was taking, you know, again, the lead role, planning the research, planning the 2020 surveys. And it was about, you know, early March of 2020, we had everything ready to go. And what happened in that time. And all of a sudden, the work that we had done, you know, our organization went from, you know, being known within the niche group of people who were very interested in online and distance learning, and then some outside of it too, who found our work to be valuable, especially in advocating for change at their institution, to everybody needing our work. My emails were just blowing up from institutions and people who are needing support, wondering what was happening in the landscape. I got into the role, and the role just, that was of course the biggest change, because it just impacted the whole digital learning landscape. We have not gone back to that 2019 point. You know, even institutions that were prior to the pandemic were going, you know, that's just not our thing. We're an in-person institution. We're just not going to be doing online offerings. You know, now, you know, 4 years later, even with the, you know, the dust having settled, you know, in many cases they are offering at least hybrid offerings or having some sort of technology integration. So the work that I've done with the CDLRA, it's changed from sort of these tracking these trends that were very, you know, situated and, you know, in educational contexts where online learning was a thing, where it was, that's what they did, to being very widespread, very pervasive, you know, impacting, you know, nearly every post-secondary experience in the country, even the face-to-face learning, having greater technology integration. It's just been a huge shift. So, you know, and of course my role has changed over time. I went from being, you know, a temporary research associate to research director. And then in, I believe it was November of 2021, November or December, I think, I stepped into the role of executive director. And, you know, we work very closely with our board of directors to you know, see what's next for our organization and, you know, planning our mission, our vision. And of course, I'm still the project lead for the Pan-Canadian Digital Learning Survey Project.
Wow. Yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, I was doing my best not to interject, but mm-hmm. I mean, that is just such an amazing workflow. I mean, apart even from the career trajectory aspect, which is ostensibly, you know, we try and do like a more personally focused kind of podcast, and that is kind of our deal. But I mean, strictly just in terms of the potential impact on practice across the entire post-secondary sector, like within Canada. I mean, those, you know, the outputs from your work are being looked at, right, and utilized. So my next scripted question was like, so what are you working on now that you find cool? I mean, clearly all of it. Maybe I'll just sort of zone in on, maybe to dial it back into the personal a bit. What do you, across, you know, some 20 odd years of a career or thereabouts, I mean, similar to me, give or take, I wonder what aspect of your role resonates for you on a personal level?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the more I get into this, the more it always comes back again to, again, looking at learning from an ecological perspective. I love those macro level trends, looking at things from the big picture. How is the whole landscape shifting and changing? Taking that bird's eye view, I find that really cool. And I think it's fun because as new technologies come in, or, you know, AI, I wouldn't necessarily call it a new technology, but it's certainly a newer topic of, you know, big conversation, just with the ChatGPT and the widespread uptake of it now, especially by students, but faculty. I find that fascinating, but it's beyond that. I love seeing how this is impacting our learning, how it impacts our systems of education. I love seeing the entrepreneurial ventures that can emerge in this landscape and really, you know, work in conjunction with institutions to improve this student experience. I think it's always interesting that, you know, beyond, we always use, or not always, you know, but there's this tendency historically in education to use, you know, in-person, you know, traditional learning as sort of our gold standard to measure things by. And I'm always challenging people to move away from that, you know, move away from comparing online to in-person, because, you know, what made that in-person, you know, the correct standard? You know, I've done my fair share of both in-person and online learning, and you know, I feel like I've experienced the best and the worst of both types of all types of modalities in my experience. And I think one of the cool things that I'm really seeing in this space right now, which has been directly related to online programs coming in and then conversations about quality for online, is this broader conversation about quality across the sector, just in terms of how learning is being taught. And as online learning itself becomes less of this separate and unique entity, and digital learning and incorporation of technology and learning becomes just more pervasive and part of what we do and how we learn, you know, this conversation of quality still keeps coming up, and what makes a quality learning experience. And there's just so many cool ideas coming about this. And then when we look at how we learn, both formally, informally, and again, this whole ecological perspective, that just fascinates me. And I think as I, you know, decide what I want to do when I grow up, I think we all get to say that no matter how old we are. I certainly have more of an interest in, more and more of an interest in, you know, using my spare time, however, you know, much or little that is, usually more little than much, to start doing some theoretical work and really rethinking some of our learning theories and how we learn, and what does that look like as we have a much more digitally, like we're immersed in digital technology in our day and age. So I don't know, did I answer your question there?
Boy, I mean, I'm just sitting there, like, just my face was even contorting a bit, because I'm just like, there's a lot to what you said that would lead to, you know, probably another half hour. And I just would like, you know, just a practical question, but I'll put an anecdote in front of that. The anecdote for me is, I mean, you mentioned your kids. I have teenagers. I got two teenagers who are on the opposite side of the country from me. And boy, oh boy, like if it weren't for the smartphone, our connection, the two, you know, between me and my two kids would just be a completely different entity than it is now. And, you know, having the ubiquitous internet, my kids were born in 2009 and 2012. They have not known a world without internet everywhere, all the time, high speed. I remember going to the computer lab in my undergrad and like sitting there and like, I didn't have a computer at home and, you know, paying for the printer credits and all the rest. It's just, they're never going to know the world, you know, prior to ubiquitous internet everywhere. So your work about like quality, nuance, I just think that is absolutely first rate. So thank you for that. Now, just in terms of a sort of technical kind of question, which maybe would have been better suited towards the end or towards the beginning rather than, you know, the last few minutes where we are now. How is your organization funded? What's the larger body that provides operational funding for your organization to carry out its work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, we're so grateful for our sponsors and partners who support us. Because Canada doesn't have a federal, you know, system of education, we really rely on a lot of provincial partners to help fund our organization. So over the years, we've had, you know, eCampus Ontario, we've had BC Campus, we've had Campus Manitoba. In 2023, we had the Maritime Provinces Higher Education Commission, Quebec Ministry of Education. All of these groups and partners have come in over the years. They've supported us. I'm really grateful for the support that we've received from Contact North over the years. And then we also have corporate sponsors. And so D2L has been a longstanding supporter and sponsor of our work. And awesome. We've also had other sponsors and partners over the years, including Pearson Canada and the Canadian Publishers Council. And we couldn't do what we do without our sponsorship. We are a non-for-profit organization. And, you know, that's something that we're incredibly grateful for and we don't take for granted, is the support that we receive from our sponsors and partners that let us, that they let me have fun. And I should add too, that one of the things we do with our organization, because I've got a passion for mentorship, like I talked about, is we work with the University of British Columbia and we offer a practicum experience for the Masters of Educational Technology students there who are coming to the close of their studies. They're close to completion. I think they have to have completed 7 courses of their program, but they're able to spend a semester doing a research practicum with me where we look through some of the historical CDLRA data together. We do an analysis on that. And then I also, we have wonderful volunteers I have 3 volunteer groups working with me right now and we're working on journal articles that we can put out. And these are people who typically have finished a master's degree in educational technology and are perhaps thinking of doing doctoral work or something. And like you talked about, that need for mentorship. And so I work with these groups. They're fantastic individuals who I get to work with. And they get the opportunity to gain research experience. And we look at the data together and we work together to write a journal article that they can then have on their CV to support their career going forward.
Wow. You know, it's just, there's so much to like about that. I'll just say that when Dr. Reed, Doug and I are, you know, we tend to take a critical bent on the show to the point of satire. And I hope, you know, you've checked out the site. You're still, you arranged for this meeting. So what you saw on the website clearly didn't faze you that much. I would just say, like, you know, it comes back to, there's so many different places you can go from this career. Mm-hmm. And people are coming at it from so many different backgrounds. So to have that transition into, you know, a structured environment. I mean, me and Doug, we always are sort of like, you know, we kind of hard on people who like are positioning themselves as professional researchers. But I think this is actually an instance where getting those publications, designing those studies, doing it like in a way that addresses this still, you know, we're still calling e-learning new, which is kind of bizarre to me, but it's like that new style of learning. It's like, it's not, but it's still, it's nascent enough where we don't have very many training opportunities, such as you described. Like Doug and I were literally talking about that on the show that came out yesterday. So just kudos to you, your organization. It sounds like you have some amazing sponsors. It sounds like you have excellent volunteers, excellent, you know, relationships sector-wide built up over a number of years of goodwill, good research, and promoting good practices. I just think it's rad from the outside, all of it, quite frankly. And I don't mean to kind of monopolize our last few minutes, but it was just, you know, my takeaways from this. I had no idea about this mentorship program as well. So it sounds awesome. Nicole, I've been really, really grateful. I know you're just at the start of the day. You already have one meeting before this. Was there anything you wanted to kind of speak to here before we end the recording for now?
No, I can't think of anything else. These were great questions. This was a lot of fun. It stretched me beyond the usual types of questions I get asked, which was really fun for me. And, you know, you said, you know, this is, you know, it's rad what I get to do. I would agree. I love what I get to do. It's really awesome to be able to do the research I do, to work with the people I do. I mean, I would tell people I've got the perfect job here. And I think too, when we talk about that ubiquitousness as well, the fact that we can do these things from home and we can also create that accessibility and opportunity for people both, you know, in the learning side with online learning, having open doors for people who can do that, to be able to have these, you know, career opportunities within the EdTech post-secondary sector where people can also, you know, continue that, you know, work from home bit and the flexibility that that offers and, you know, the fact that I can travel, you know, cool places to meet with colleagues and to connect with them while still also being at home, raising, you know, my kids who also are, you know, 3 out of 4 are teenagers now, but, you know, still being able to, you know, structure my life in a way that I can, you know, support them and support others through mentorship and do work that I love. I think we live in such a cool time and there's so much that is still to come that I am excited to see unfold in my lifetime. So thank you so much for this. And thank you for asking me these questions. This was a lot of fun. So I appreciate that random invitation and I'm so glad I accepted.
Well, I'm so glad you did too. And we are sort of, you know, trying to kind of expand the scope of the show because, I mean, if it's just me and Doug, you know, two middle-aged kind of guys, you know, on the East Coast, it's just sort of let's just kind of bring in as many perspectives as we can from practitioners at every level. And I get really the sense that you see yourself as a practitioner within the entrepreneurial and, you know, research space at the macro level, as you say. So I just, we're ending this discussion on like an unparalleled optimistic note. We're, Doug and I were just used to being, you know, cynical kind of out of necessity. I'm deeply pleased to be able to kind of go out on a note that is actually optimistic about the futures of technology rather than just sort of being pessimistic out of necessity. So really, thanks a lot for being here. It's been awesome. And I just am grateful very much, Nicole. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to end the recording now, folks. Okay. Bye from me. Take care, everybody.